Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Los Angeles, the city of blockbusters and movie stars, where no-name nobodies flock to become big-name somebodies, where dreams come true, where people go to see their name in lights. Wait, that description does sound awfully familiar. It seems reminiscent of another city, one much closer to us East Coasters, say, New York?
Atlantic City. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant Atlantic City.
Atlantic City, Trenton.
Where dreams come true. Trenton, Atlantic City.
Or Trenton or, you know, New York. Mm. So according to our guests who are chiming in even before being introduced, Ben Grant and Thomas Lennon, both Hollywood screenwriters and stars of the Comedy Central mockumentary Reno 911, in order to make it big as a screenwriter, you have to get out of the Big Apple. You need to move to L.A. Sorry. Rob and Tom have co-written a book to try to help all of you aspiring screenwriters turn your dreams of writing movie scripts into blockbusting, ticket-selling, and most importantly, money-making realities. The book is called Writing Movies for Fun and Profit, How We Made $1 Billion at the Box Office, and You Can Too. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Thanks very much for having us.
Now, thank you for pointing that out. We do say over and over and over again in the book that you can't live in a brownstone in fabulous Greenwich Village. Well, that's because we also point out that our book is not for writing films that will ever be shown at the Angelica Film Center.
No, or Film Forum.
Or Film Forum, which Ben used to be a member of. We lived in New York for many years.
If you want Oscars or to win Independent Spirit Awards, not the book for you, probably. It
really,
really is about the studio system.
Really, any awards.
You want to be in the multiplexes.
Exactly. Yeah. If you want to be on a red carpet with a monkey, this is your book.
Mm-hmm.
So that image of the Woody Allen-style New York City screenwriter who makes it big nonetheless, that's a myth?
Have his movies made it big yet?
Well, you know,
some
he seems
of them
to have
did,
made
of
a living.
No, he's had some enormous hits. It's just once you're – we point out once you're super established in the book, you can do what we all want to do, which is move back to New York and live in the village in a brownstone next to Ethan Hawke. Specifically, we cite that in the book as something that we would very much like to do.
Then you can be an art prima donna.
The bummer is eight films and $1.4 billion at the box office later. We still can't afford to move back to New York yet.
No. Uh-uh.
So have you looked at apartment prices
you've
around
looked
here?
At the apartment prices,
yeah, we have.
Obviously.
We
and
have.
L.A. is what, cheap?
Oh, my God. Have you been to it? Because it's a
big
trash
lawn,
have
big
you been?
Pool. Oh, it's horrible.
Oh,
it's a horrible
mess.
But it's big.
So
your house
gross.
Is big. And you can have a garden.
You can get a really large mansion. It's just disgusting. You have to not mind that.
Listeners, if you want to play ball with these guys, you can. Seriously, if you want to be involved in the movie-making business, let us know if you agree that you have to move to L.A., or we'll share some other tips as well. It's not just all about where you live. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. From, you know, the basement of the NYU Film School or anywhere else, 212-433-9692.
But we were those guys. We lived here for 12 years and swore we would never, ever move
never,
to Los
ever.
Angeles.
Really?
And we went there for the final season of a cable show we had called Viva Variety. And when we were there, we got our first meeting at a studio just because we'd actually done something in the past, even if it was a little tiny basic cable show. And we realized, wow, L.A. really is where they make the movies and TV and stuff. And so we swore we'd never move there, and now we haven't
come back. It's basically like, you know how in Los Angeles the woolly mammoths got caught in those tar pits?
I did
fully
about
formed,
that.
And they get sucked under, and then years later you can find them intact. That's what happens to you as a screenwriter if you go to Hollywood.
Showbiz is the tar. It sucks you in,
and then you
unless
never get out.
Unless you make $1 billion, like your book claims you guys did.
And then you move back here and live in a tiny, wonderful little brownstone.
Yeah, that'll be great. We'll do that one day.
So it's not just about moving to L.A. In your book, you mentioned that you need to get an agent. You need to write short pitches. Mm-hmm. You need to be nice to everyone.
Every single person that you meet. Because the person who's bringing you your bottled water in one meeting in 2 years will probably be the head of a studio.
It really is. We've seen it happen a lot. There's really only about 75 or 80 significant people in Hollywood.
And you meet them over and over again.
We're currently right now working on a film with the person who single-handedly was responsible for not picking up the TV show Reno 911 when we did the pilot for Fox. So,
but when she fired us, we were very nice.
We were
and
nice.
Now they're in the movie business, and we're working with her again.
Many chapters in the book about
being nice.
Well, and how to get fired gracefully. which is really what it's about.
You meet the same people on the way up as on the way down, right? Mm-hmm. Your one-time intern becomes your boss.
Very few people ever go down, though.
No,
everybody just kind of hovers in the middle.
It's just like a Mobius.
You fail up, you fail down.
It's a Mobius of inefficiency.
Mike in Newark, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike. Mike. Oh, let's see.
All the beautiful, curvaceous chicks with the big lips in L.A.
All right, I see we're functioning at a very high level of discourse.
Yes, so your question is, isn't the plastic surgery better in Los Angeles? And, you know, I would say, having seen The Real Housewives of New Jersey, I'd say that's
I'd say
I'm
that's
calling that even.
So, yeah.
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 James in Greenpoint, you're on WNYC.
Yes, I'm just curious what your opinion was of fundraising programs such as Kickstarter and Indiegogo.
Well, these are interesting. You know, I just recently have given some money to some friends of mine who were trying to get a movie made, and the financing completely fell through. And then they just started up a campaign on Kickstarter to totally fund their movie. June Raphael, Paul Scheer's wife, did that. And it totally worked. They raised $50,000, and it seems like a very democratic way to get your movie made, and it seems like you won't have too many – you won't be getting notes from studios, at least.
And there's a couple of documentary guys who shot a movie called Once Upon a Time in Knoxville, and they literally sent an email to anybody who they even thought was from Knoxville or Tennessee, mm-hmm. and you get a link to their website, and you watch their movie. And if you donate $1,000, you get to be a producer.
Ooh.
And so, like, mm-hmm. the list of producers is, like, 100 people. but they raised enough movie to, like, make
enough
prints
money, yeah.
of their movie to fill it out. Like, so, yeah, do anything that you can.
Robert Ben-Gurant and Thomas Lennon with us, authors of Writing Movies for Fun and Profit, How We Made $1 Billion at the Box Office, and You Can Too, 212-433-WNYC. You might also know them from Reno 911, where you were writing the material and calling the shots. But now, as Hollywood screenwriters, you have to take notes from someone higher up.
Mm-hmm. Or Martin Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a chapter of the book called Martin Lawrence Has a Few Thoughts, and it's about how to take notes from a movie star. Because it's interesting, by default, pretty much every movie star writes the movie that they're starring in. Now, sometimes for us that's been exciting because, like, Ben Stiller is a writer and a very funny comedian in his own right. Sometimes it's just some person who's a movie star. But by the nature of the business, you must do all of their notes 100% of the time. You have to agree with them. That's the way it goes. Otherwise, you'll very quickly be fired.
The more money that you spend on something, the less control you have as a writer. So yeah. Reno, the budget of Reno was $500,000 an episode, which is nothing. But then for the big giant movies that we write, we're the last person who anybody right. cares what we think. We turn it in. We're usually immediately fired after they greenlight the script, and yeah. they hire somebody else for fresh eyes. And you just got to – part of the book is just learning that you're the low man on the totem pole as a writer in Hollywood.
We say in the book what's important, which is when you turn in your scripts to the studios, turn them into an Adobe Acrobat PDF document, which is a locked – file. That is the only way
people
will
can't
know.
Mess with it.
Well, and it's also the only way you'll know that you got fired, because one day someone's assistant will call you and say, hey, can we get a final draft copy of the script that you sent us?
Just casually
just for fun, could you
and
shoot
then,
one over? And you know for a fact,
we've been fired.
Someone else is doing the
then
script
you,
now.
Then you get your one-time fee, and there go the royalties.
Yep.
Morton in Manhattan wants to disagree about moving to L.A. as a necessity, right? Morton? Morton's having a fight with his wife while he's talking on the radio.
This is classic New York City stuff. Have you ever seen that movie Rear Window? You can't get any work done.
Wait,
like that.
I think we should just be quiet and listen for a minute. Morton? Is Morton home?
Do you need help?
Yes, I am.
Hi, you're on the air, Morton.
Hi, I just want to make sure that there was a right impression about the film industry in New York. It is booming. There aren't enough studios to accommodate all of the production going on in New York.
That's production, sure. We're talking about writing, basically. Yeah, we weren't talking about... No, there's tons of stuff shooting in New York. That's true.
And I'm actually glad that you got forced to make that distinction.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But we're
but
talking
the
about
offices of the people who greenlight yeah. those movies, and there's some here, a vast majority of them are in L.A.
A lot of them are in L.A.
And some of them don't even have New York offices. And just we just want to press that for young screenwriters because it's exponentially easier in Los Angeles because you really have to be there face-to-face to shake hands, to be able to, at the last minute, you know, fly down to Fox and do like a roundtable punch-up of something and meeting the people in Hollywood. And even if there are a lot in New York, about 80, 90% of them are in Los Angeles. And we're really
and
talking about
you,
young guys starting out.
They want you close by so they can yell at you. And again, we're also not – we're not talking about art house stuff. We're not talking about indies.
Ooh,
we're not
talking
about anything other than giant studio movies.
We have a minute left. I just have to ask you this
because
in your book you claim that every movie is exactly the same. So you're telling me The Notebook Fast and The Furious are the same?
Structurally,
pretty much.
Yes. And this is the reason that we hit this so hard is because you come out of film school with a chip on your shoulder and think, I'm going to reinvent the wheel. But as soon as you realize that the structure of Casablanca and The Matrix and Die Hard are the same, it's a weight off your shoulders because when you're building a building, no matter how challenging your architecture wants to be, it's still going to have four walls and a roof. And as soon as you realize that about the Hollywood movie, your life will become easier.
Unless you're Frank Gehry and then it's got 90 walls or one wall and it's just reflective.
So what's the formula? Give me your 30-second, what's the word, treatment of the movie formula that all movies are based on.
You get a likable guy stuck up on a tree, you throw rocks at him, you get him down. First 10 pages, you meet a guy, you get the guy in a terrible situation on page 10, he ignores it until page 25. On page 25, he gets thrust into it. On page 45, it gets even worse for him. On page 80 or 85, things get absolutely the worst they could possibly be, and the thing that he thinks he could do to get him out of the situation doesn't work, and then on page 100, he wins.
Robert Ben Grant and Thomas Lennon, authors of Writing Movies for Fun and Profit, How We Made $1 Billion at the Box Office, and You Can Too, whether you know them from Reno 911 or Herbie or The Pacifier. They do say that Herbie Fully Loaded, quote, sucks, and they wrote it.
We weren't the first ones to say that.
No. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thank you. A pleasure.
Thanks very much. Yeah.